Hi, I'm Nick Lippa for WBFO, your NPR station. As part of our ongoing mental health initiative, we are bringing you a series of reports, podcast episodes, and Facebook Live discussions during this health crisis that focuses on your mental health. The Mental Health Initiative is funded by the Patrick P. Lee Foundation, and today we are discussing some of the challenges presented to the immigrant and refugee community during COVID-19. Joining me via the WhatsApp is Ali Kadum, chair of the Iraqi American Society. Ali, thanks for taking the time. Our immigrant population includes many people who have suffered trauma and torture. How does that kind of past experience have an impact on someone's mental health during a pandemic?
Yeah, most people, as you said, I mean, they came from different backgrounds because of the war zone or the fear they live in their life. So this is really re-traumatizing to them, staying home, probably thinking there will be starving in a time. Also, there's losing family members day by day because of that. So the entire situation right now is really increased the anxiety for people. This has caused probably fear in the community. We try to keep everyone busy. One of our goals to provide an education, like authentic information, real information about COVID-19 and translate it to different language or and use the website that it's part of Department of Health. So to share it with the community to make sure that they got the correct information, how to keep themselves and their family safe and healthy. So this is our main goal. A nice way for the community, they suggest to support hospitals, local hospitals staff who are working in a frontliner with COVID-19. We are going to prepare about 200 meals. Food is Middle Eastern food from our local restaurant. Sponsored by family. I have some family, they donated $5, some people $20. It's kind of appreciation for the medical staff who risk their family and their lives to save people who are infected with COVID-19. So this is one of the helping community feel they are participate in the society, they are not watching everything. And also we are organizing the blood donation from community. This is going to be on May. I spoke with the Red Cross. They said they do have a lot of blood in this month, but they prefer to May. So we are organizing with the community to have appointment for the community to go and do a blood donation to support the community in general.
So you mentioned a couple of things, one of which was talking about educating the community. And when we talk about our immigrant population, one of the things that stands out is you have over 80 languages spoken in a place like the Buffalo Public Schools, that just alone. How do you talk about handling language barriers to be able to understand where and how to get accurate information?
So there's a lot of good websites since this virus come to our beautiful earth. So there's a lot of websites from Canada, from British, different country. They start to, respond to people who are speaking different language. And we did a good research about that and try to not overwhelm the community in general with information, but give them the basic information about the virus on what is the important things to keep their families safe and healthy. So I am a part of the committee called World Refugee Day in Western New York. We do everything every year on June, organize people from different background to do soccer tournament, cultural performance, provide free food to the community. Unfortunately, this year we may not do it because of this issue. But so that's make us connected with most of the community. We do have people represent different community from Africa, Asia, Middle East. So the the activists or leaders or community leaders, they do the same. Each community, they are start to respond to their community to provide the support and educate them about the COVID-19.
For a lot of people, not being able to work, the concern to feed their families has to be pretty high right now.
Yeah. This is one of the very challenging time. People, they are not able to pay their rent because of they lost their job. And with language barrier, sometimes it's so difficult for them to go online and apply for an employment or find the resources because it's very limited social communication. So it's making a big challenge. We try to, link people with food pantry, try to talk with the landlord to help. We have a very nice people. They did not take their rent for that month. So for April, and that's make Buffalo is a good neighbor for people. So they understand the situation that some family, they are not working. So this is one of their participation. Most landlords, they avoid, taking rent for this month. In terms of food, there's a committee also in Buffalo. They try to bring food donation from different community and try to deliver it to each house by using bicycle. So I see the response of the community to this crisis is a huge, impact and support to our community. This is not only for immigrant and refugee, but in general, we see the people come together as a one nation, one community.
Have you heard and or seen concern regarding the profiling of Asian American immigrants or refugees during this pandemic in Buffalo that has been a national topic for a lot of people?
What we have been seeing, most of immigrants and people, they do have family overseas and they travel, every year on different time of holidays. So, and we do have people, they came from different country here, when the work start. When there's an issues like this, health crisis, the most important things is making people come together and support each other until this will be done. On the political issues, probably I don't think I have an answer for that question. But I see people like in the United States, they are the country of immigrant. We have people from different part of the world, and that's why make American a beautiful and powerful country with a diversity and great population, and they became part of this American life. We are we can't blame any country. This is what happened. Probably this day happened in China. In the future, we don't know where this virus is going to come from. So and the most important things for us a human, how to save our lives and protect each other's instead of blaming countries or people about that.
And we run into a situation right now where we're talking specifically about refugees and immigrants, but a lot of the stressors that refugees and immigrants are experiencing are the same or similar to everybody else, right?
Sure, yeah. There's a lot of foreignness. My family live in Iraq. There's people from Iran, their family in Iran. So we are all worried. We are probably not worried only about ourselves here, but we are worried about our family overseas. And I'm sure there's a lot of Asian people, they live here in this country. They are worried about their family. So I think everyone is trying to doing a great job with try to reduce the social contact and try to work hard to make sure that everyone stay healthy and safe. We need people, we need all these great people to still alive. And I feel sorry and pray for those who lost, the family who lost their members, overseas or here in the United States. Our pray and our peace with them to support the family about this loss. I know there's a thousands of people lives, I mean, pass away because of that.
And you're talking about long distance being a problem. You're talking about another country to that regard, but there's definitely other Americans who deal with that in a closer proximity from state to state. Similar situations to that. It's everybody at this point, but especially when you talk about a few of the barriers like language, that's just an additional challenge. Talking before, you mentioned you've spoken to some families who haven't felt safe even leaving their own house, and part of that's because of the language barrier.
You know, I've been contacting many people in the community. This is one of them, making sure everyone is doing well and if they are safe, if they are. So it's kind of checking. And I spoke with one of the families since the COVID-19 until last week. She said, Ali, me and my kids are staying home and we are not seeing anyone. And it's really overwhelming for the family. They are, I mean, receiving probably some information, making them overwhelmed with the with that information. Very scared about her kids to be outside. She thought this virus is in the air. I mean, she cannot open the windows. So, and we start to provide this information to tell her, I mean, the right information, which is reducing her anxiety about the virus. And we tell her, I mean, you can walk with your kids and try to keep this distance. They can use the mask when they go outside, or probably use the park but not the playgrounds. So at least 30 minutes walking. We give them very good instruction to keep the hair on the kids safe. And she really appreciate that. I mean, probably without, I mean, the community, we have a lot of community activists. And so they try to check and call. We really need that call. If I'm not doing this phone call, I don't know that this family will, I mean, survive with the, I mean, they, she did a lot of shopping. This is what happened in overseas. Sometimes when like a Great Depression, there's a lot of people do, I mean, a lot of shopping. They fill their home with the foods. So she was preparing about that. Even for 3 weeks, she didn't go, I mean, do shopping because she already did everything. And she thought this is going to be the same of the time that she lived in a starvation time in her country.
So how's the family doing now?
So now the family, they are understanding much better about the situation. And, you know, kids, they do have a lot of energy and they are out of school. And So especially most of these kids right now in this time, they are behind the electronics. So I try to give her some suggestion to play family game, boarding game. So on doing some exercise, try to. So I share with her a lot of good information to keep herself and her kids busy in this time. She know, I mean, I teach her how to use Zoom, and her kids now they start to talk with the other kids on Zoom because Zoom is a free service. And it's interesting to see the kids now, they are talking with their friends, calling them. So I see people learn more about this technology and using the internet or some app to build this social connection again. So it's amazing to see that.
You're talking about being able to help inform accurately in a time where there may be a lot of inaccurate information, correct?
Yeah.
What's the challenge for you when you're talking to a family? How often are you confronting inaccurate information?
Sometimes with that fear, I mean, you can see on Facebook or social media, there is a lot of suggestion of how to treat COVID-19 if somebody, or I mean, there are some people try to give a lot of wrong information. So you cannot control on this social media. And unless you give call to people and talk with them, what do you think? How's everything? And they're going to tell you, I mean, I'm doing this. So you know, I mean, if they receive good information, or probably, I mean, they do have fear that pushing them to do things that they are not supposed to do. So, and this fear for parents, which is transferred sometimes to the kids, because unfortunately, I see a lot of, I mean, some family, even inside the home, I mean, they this is caused like OCD things, obsessive compulsive disorder with, I mean, a cleaning in a home continuously. Sometimes this is the home, nobody come to the home, but the family still, I mean, has this fear from, I mean, they have to clean the home every second, washing. So, I mean, we have to make sure to keep everyone healthy and safe. But probably overthinking also is not healthy to our behavioral future. We want to make sure to try to avoid any contact with others. I mean, and also having hand sanitizer, mask. With us. So, and when we come home, making sure that, I mean, keeping our shoes or sandals outside the home in the garage or somewhere. What we see some family, it's really this fear probably control their probably future thinking. So, yeah.
So let's focus in on one main other thing right now. And that's trauma-informed care. What does that mean as it pertains to COVID-19?
I think the most important things first is education, as we said, create safety environment through telling people the right information on what they need to be prepared for this, probably for a month or two, depend on. Try to empowering them and try to help them to make them as a decision maker for their family to take the right on the right decision for what is the best for their family and themselves. I mean, this situation, I see even sometimes with family, if they have like just a sneezing or because of we have allergy season here in Western New York, many people, they do have allergy things. So, and I've been talking with some family, they said, I mean, I'm afraid I need to go to the hospital. So because of sneezing a lot, she thought or they thought, I mean, they have this virus. So, or maybe wake up, they don't feel good. They thought that they have this kind of symptoms. The good things we provide the phone. I mean to give a call to the primary doctor, asking them if they have these symptoms. They need to go to the local hospital. I think these primary doctor, they are doing great job with probably addressing the needs. We do have health. I work with the best self behavioral health. Like health coordinator or care manager, speaking different language, they do a lot of, coordinating with the providers to provide right information or call behalf of the client to make sure that, I mean, if the client need to go to the hospital or they can't seen by a primary doctor. Trauma-informed care, I think it's really important to focus on education and empowering community in general.
If somebody from the refugee or immigrant population was looking for resources during this time that they wanted to confirm, where would you recommend they go to speak with somebody?
The only, I mean, supporter in this time for non-English speaker is the community leaders or community representatives, probably healthcare provider. They do have a lot of translator. So this is the right place to start. And friend, family who speak English, I think that's a good thing. We do have a good resources on Erie County website. So I think for those who speak English, if they need a job opportunity, there's a lot of I mean, job opening right now, and we have a WhatsApp in the community, about 200 people in this WhatsApp in the community, and I'm sure there's other community, they do have the same WhatsApp to communicate with their own people, share job opening, share information, try to discuss things that's important for the family and kids. So I think I've been seeing this as most people, they are working maybe individually or with a group, and hopefully in the future there will be something, I mean, like a coalition of working together, as you said, like if somebody needs something, so they can go directly there.
Ali, I want to thank you for taking the time with us and sharing your experiences thus far. All communities face similar challenges during this pandemic, but it's good to hear some of the barriers for our immigrant and refugee communities are being met by some of the community leaders. You've been listening to a conversation with Ali Kadam, chair of the Iraqi American Society. It's part of our series, Your Mental Health During COVID-19, which includes podcasts like this one, WBFO Radio Reports, and Facebook Live Conversations. There's more to watch and to listen to at wned.org/mental health. Again, the Mental Health Initiative is funded by the Patrick P. Lee Foundation. For WBFO, I'm Nick Lippa.